Today's episode is my appearance on the Model Health Show with Sean Stevenson. You're going to learn about how to attract abundance into your life and what it means to go the empty mile. Tweet me at David Meltzer, your favorite part from today's episode, or you can join my text community, 949-298-2905. Ask me any questions live on Fridays at my free training, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, at david@dmeltzer.com. This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
I'd like to welcome to the Model Health Show, David Meltzer. What's up, man?
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited. Anyone friend with Ed Mylett is a friend of mine.
Definitely. I love Ed. I
me
love
too.
Ed.
Talk about positivity.
Yeah, man. It's so great to have you on. And I want to start with your superhero origin story. All right. Because there's just a nugget what I shared here. And I usually don't read people's bio like that, but your story is so fascinating. And just before the show, we're talking about like you've been literally all over the map with where you've come from. And so let's talk about this. Let's talk about the early years.
Yeah.
All right. Because your kind of childhood background, you definitely didn't think you'd be doing what you're doing today.
No, I didn't. I actually thought I was going to be a professional football player. But I grew up in a highly academic environment with a single mom and six kids. Wow. And our way out was education. But for some reason, I'm going to get choked up when I talk about my mom, but all I wanted to do was be rich. And like, not for me, because I grew up happy. You know, five boys, one girl, two-bedroom apartment in Akron, Ohio. It may not seem like a bed of happiness, but it was the start of understanding that I lived in a world of more than enough. Right, and it's very important as we kind of go through this to know that that's the world that I believe in. And even though monetarily, most people would look at me like I was living in the Bagani in Africa, to me it was more than enough. But the only time I wasn't happy was I'd catch my mom crying. Because, you know, the car broke down and she had too much pride to ask for help. And all these energies and things kind of laid into me. But I just wanted to buy my mom a house and a car. And I thought, because I was so fast from running scared from people, that I would be a professional football player. Yeah. Although all my siblings, they reached academically Harvard, Penn, Columbia. I was kind of the black sheep of the family because I truly believed in myself that I was going to tear my way out of this economic downturn by being a great athlete.
Wow. I did not know that part. That's incredible. And I could just see just the connection and the drive. I think that's so important because a lot of people are like, I want to be rich, but why?
Right.
Why would the universe endow you with these funds if you don't have a very specific reason?
Yeah, there has to be a why to everything that you do, right? And then the how comes, right? It's what do you want? Why do you want it? And how are you going to get it? And those are three things I still use today. And I see so many people not even know what they want.
Right.
They don't even know that they want to be happy. Mm. You know, I tell people all the time, you guarantee happiness from the time you open your eyes till the time you close it. That's enough. That's enough. And allow the universe to unravel in front of you. Allow things to happen. You know, and the way you do that is to be of service.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that when I was young, though.
Right. And so, but coming out of law school,
You
had a pretty meteoric rise.
Yeah. You know, I learned a lot, you know, wanting to be a professional football player and getting my butt kicked, then wanting to be a doctor and learning that I better be more interested than interesting, you know, which really played later in life as I ran Lee Steinberg. So many people still today are like, Mr. Meltzer, I want to be a sports agent. And I think back to when I was 18 years old and realized I wasn't going to be an NFL player when I got my butt kicked in college. And my brother in the hospital, he's like, I go, hey, I hate hospitals. He's like, Dave, you want to be a doctor and you hate hospitals? That one line, though, be more interested than interesting, changed my life.
Yeah.
And so I graduated law school more interested than interesting. I had two choices, to be a litigator or to work in technology in the internet. This is the early 90s. People didn't really know what the internet was yet. Right. So I asked my mom, you know, what should I do? And she says, the internet's going to be a fad. Be a real lawyer. But I decided not to.
Oh man, the classic, the internet's gonna be fat.
Yeah.
I've got a friend like
so is social media, by the way.
Right. You're welcome.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. I haven't shared this with you before, but so I'm obsessed with health. I'm obsessed with biology, kinesiology. Like these are my deep, deep passions. And initially I went to school pre-med, but I found out that I hated science. I hated it. I hated everything about it. But it was the way that I was taught. You know, it was so disconnected from my reality as a human.
Yeah.
And so once there was a connection, like I lost my health. And so my kind of journey back and discovering how much all these things that I was learning in class in this kind of technical, superficial way related to me. And so I decided to make this so much more colorful for everybody else and make that connection happen. you know, and so being interesting, you know, and that's what it's really about. It really makes a connection.
Yeah, it really does. And I think the second lesson too I learned, and I think it's important for everyone out there, is a lot of times we ask advice from people that we love so much. That doesn't mean it's good advice. And then we end up resenting the people we love the most because we ask them a question that there's no way they would know, right? Asking my mom, a second grade teacher, about the internet, bad move. Right? Right. And she was giving me advice on what she felt would be best for
she's
me.
Looking out for you.
But if I didn't get involved in the technology side of things, I never would have evolved to what my life was. I never would have had the rise within 9 months of being a millionaire right out of law school.
That's nuts.
That was nuts.
Lately, I've been really kind of, for whatever reason, and that's why I asked you before the show if you met my friend Bedros Koulian before, which I'm going to definitely link you guys up.
Please.
And I talked to him about failure because he's had some of the craziest stories of failure. And today, you know, a lot of the great entrepreneurs and people in the fitness business, they go to him to go to another level because he's so acclimated to success now. And so I want to ask you, like, what happened? So you had this meteoric rise and you lost everything.
So, you know, simply I surrounded myself, and this is what you were talking about when you started the show, surrounded myself with the wrong people and the wrong ideas. I attached my happiness to outcomes again and again. I'll be happy when I graduate law school. I'll be happy when I make $1 million. What happened was I kept becoming more and more successful. I ran, you know, Samsung's first phone, their very first smartphone called the PC phone. I was the CEO at 32, right, of the very first smartphone ever. And I built this beautiful home, you know, down in San Diego in Rancho Santa Fe. And I remember I had no why. I sat there empty. And I started this process of self-sabotage by surrounding myself with the wrong people and the wrong ideas. And pretty soon I lost stake in who I was. And I went back, and thanks to my wife, and I realized who I was and, you know, started living my life with those values.
Wow. Wow. So it's not just the people we're around, it's the ideas we're around.
No doubt. That's why you listen to the podcast you listen to.
Right, right. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, because there's an energy to every action, thought, and belief. And when we're, you know, I even your economy, I always say, look at your five best friends. Average their salaries out, that's probably what you make. You'll be amazed. You are an aggregate of what you read, what you listen to, who you hang out with. And when you do that, you start realizing that, and so everybody from Tony Robbins, they talk about surrounding yourself with the right people and the right ideas. And when I started reading Napoleon Hill and Wayne Dyer and all of these, all of a sudden, you know, I started elevating my vibration. And looking at vibration, I know on the health side, you understand it, is a critical component. It's a thermostat that Ed and I talk about. That vibration, the higher you vibrate, you can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than you. So if you're continually to expand and elevating your vibration closer to the truth, you're going to be aware of so much more than everyone else.
Right. That's something that I've touched on a couple of times. We've done over 300 shows.
Wow.
And I've talked about being able to handle the wattage of this abundance that you want to have. Are you actually capable of handling that good that you actually want to have?
Yeah.
Right? And it takes a lot of inner work. It takes a lot of physical work. You know, it's not just a mental or spiritual thing, but physically to be able to handle all of that goodness. And even in, I know it sounds crazy, but you could probably speak on that a little bit too.
Yeah, no doubt. And some people, I've worked with a guy named Master and Dr. Shaw. He's probably one of the biggest healers in the world. You know, grandmaster from China, and he's a medical doctor. He gave me these beads, and I trace calligraphies for energy and enlightenment every day to carry that energy. And when people go to his workshops, at the end, the biggest comment I always get is, man, I feel terrible, right? I feel so bad. Because physically, they can't handle, like literally when you go to Tony Robbins or other workshops, if you ever end it and you just think you're exhausted, but you actually physically ache and people get sick sometimes, it's because they can't physically handle the elevation that quick. You know, it's like not jogging and then running a marathon.
Right.
Your body's going to be really sore. It's not humanly impossible, but you can actually do that emotionally, energy in motion. And I see it all the time that people don't, as John Assaroff says, they don't do the appropriate inner size. They do the appropriate exercise, but they're not using the parts of their inner size to make sure they're fit and ready for what they're asking for.
Yeah. So what do you recommend people do to do that inner size?
Absolutely meditate. and every day. So one of the things that I teach is the consistency of things. I believe 2 minutes of meditation every day is worth more than an hour a week. I can prove it in sports. Golf's the easiest way. I'll tell anyone, look, golf 30 minutes a day with the appropriate help, 30 minutes a day focusing in on a certain area of the game. By an end of the year, you'll be a much better golfer, guaranteed, even if you don't play one round of golf. Whereas if you play 6 hours of golf every week on a Saturday, which is twice as much time as a half an hour every day, you could be a worse golfer. Mm. Same thing's true about meditation. And that's because there's exponential power in doing something every day. Yeah. It goes from your cellular to your neural pathways into your unconscious.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so what you're talking about as well, and we've touched on this many times, but this is why I love talking with you, because it brings stuff full circle. It's like this myelination process, right? So you've got those nerve pathways firing in a certain way, and you're laying down more and more insulation over those pathways, so they start firing automatically.
Yeah.
Versus that when it's randomly happening and you're wondering why things aren't getting better.
Yeah, you create these systems and wiring that's wired to your success of what you want. And just in the contrary, there's a zero effect that you and I had mentioned before.
Yeah.
And this is where people don't get it. They literally, you could do something, let's say I give you to say thank you 30 straight days. Day one, it's one. Day two, it's one times two. That's the power of gratitude. Day three, it's one times two times three. Day four times four. Day five, you forget. That's time zero. So at the end of the month, if you want to harness the whole power of gratitude, you would be at multiples of 31, the permeation of 31. But let's say you zeroed yourself out three times. Now, in your mind, you're thinking, I did it all month, 28 days, man, I'm on it. I'm super grateful. But you've zeroed yourself out. So you either get no results or incremental results compared to the person who can consistently, which leads to persistence, right? When you do something every day, then you don't quit.
Right.
The enjoyment of the pursuit of that potential, the highest vibration, the truth.
Right. It becomes a part of who you are.
Yeah.
It's difficult. And I know some people, when they don't have this as a part of their life, but there are many people listening who they feel weird or off or even terrible if they don't exercise.
Yeah.
Because it's so much a part of their psyche.
Yeah, that's why habits are formed. That's a great point. And that can happen with good habits or bad habits.
Right.
You can feel drain or loss.
Yeah. So you just brought up something that I wanted to talk with you about. And it's, you said gratitude. And this can seem kind of airy-fairy. This can seem kind of disconnected.
I call it woo-woo.
You know? And so, but I feel that this is the one thing that I do no matter what. Some things might get kind of checked off or cut off depending on the schedule, you know, for many years, my schedule entailed meditation, exercise, reading, you know, drinking water, all of these things. I do the water no matter what, this inner bath that I've been teaching people about for many years. It's in different books now. And I read. Like, those are the first two things that I do. Meditation, it's not like it used to be. I used to meditate for 30 minutes for like 2.5 years straight. And then it started to change, especially after I had a younger child show up. And I do more mini meditations, but every day, no matter what, I still have this gratitude practice. And it shifts my energy in a really profound way. And it really gets me focused on why I'm doing what I'm doing. So can you talk about for you the utility value of why gratitude works?
Yeah, the utility value is that it's the easiest way to change your life. So we both have studied physics, quantum physics, metaphysics, and all the different things that I've learned, nothing changes your life more than your perspective. And there's only one factor in perspective, and that's whether you're grateful for it or not. Because what gratitude does, it makes everything in your past better, everything in your present even better than that, and everything in your future even brighter. It's an entire perspective changer. And so what we want to do is program ourselves, wire ourselves to be grateful. And the power of it went beyond just saying thank you in the morning when I woke up and listing out like a little five-year-old what I was grateful for and thank you when I went to bed. It started truly invading everything I did. I'll give you an example. You know, I was on my way home, pick up my son, and I was late. I'm accountable for being late. And of course, I get stopped at the red light. In the past, I would always swear, get aggravated, be detrimental, raise resistance, and then most likely attract more red lights on the way or other things to stop me. I used gratitude all of a sudden and said, thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. Obviously, there's something in store for me that you're teaching me. Mm-hmm. And this is the formula. Lessons are miracles. Period. Lessons in life are the miracles of life. Well, how do you learn lessons? Through experiences. those experiences can be seen as good or bad. But they truly are just experiences. So what makes an experience good or bad? Gratitude. If something happens to you and you're grateful for it, like for me, I lost everything, as you stated earlier, right? When I truly believed and understood that I was so grateful that losing everything brought radical humility into my life, a great lesson. It's a miracle. Without the miracle of radical humility, I wouldn't be where I am today. So in essence, the best thing that ever happened to me, most people would consider the hardest, most challenging, worst thing that ever happened to them, but it's the miracle of my life. It's the miracle of humility and one of the key components, one of the key characteristics to give me a better perspective along with gratitude.
I love that. I love it so much because as soon as you said it, it makes the past better. I was like, what is this? It's so real. But I think that you've also, it's a muscle that you exercise because like you said.
Intercise.
Intercise. Right. When something negative, seemingly negative on the surface is going on for you to stop and then to realize like, wait a minute, this is happening for me. Right, it's not happening to me. It's a gift in it somewhere.
Oh, let me touch on that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
You kill me with, because I've just went through this transformation. You'll love it. So I used to think everything happened to me, right? I remember when my brother died when I was in law school, and I almost had to drop out of law school, and I went home to my mom to tell her I was quitting law school, and my uncle, he's like, my biggest fear is you think everything happens to you. You're a victim. I've never seen you be a victim, Dave. Right? He's like, you're making things don't happen to you. They happen for you. The universe is in your favor. It's always been in your favor. Right. And so I lived the rest of my time thinking that my new philosophy, which I think is just incredible, is things don't even happen for me anymore. They happen through me. Mm-hmm. So they're coming down for me. And then the only way they actually have value is when I give them away. X plus David equals more. Coming through me. And that emptying of the vessel, keeping in the flow, allows me to attract and handle everything that I want. And how do we have things come through us? By doing good deeds. So as many as we can. And that living an inspired life. So I tell people all the time, hold on. It's better than things are happening for you, man. They're happening through you. So not only happening for you, it's happening for everybody else because we're all connected. So it's all happening for and through us, and that gives me motivation. People say, why is money so important? You have make a lot of money, help a lot of people, have a lot of fun, because everything comes through me. So the more money that I make, it's coming for everyone, not only for me.
This is one of the greatest things I've ever heard.
I've worked hard on it.
This is just blowing my mind right now, and I've never shared this before. This is just something that I carry in my mental construct, even before I did the show or... if I'm going on stage, I always ask that, and I've never said these words out loud, spirit speak through me and goodness speak through me, service come through me.
Yeah.
And I've never heard anybody else articulate it, you know, and it's just so refreshing to hear this because it's like, it's a different level of being. And it's not just me and my little self that I have to do this job. It's something bigger. And I get to participate in it rather than...
Yeah. And when you step off stage, right, you know it came through you because everyone else can tell you what you said, but you have no idea because it came right through you.
Yeah.
Right. It didn't come from you or to you or even for you. Yeah. That's beautiful, man. And it would help everybody if we all thought about the connectivity, which is through emotions, energy and motion. And the more energy that we have, the more it keeps flowing. And then people are like, how do you do everything that you do? It's just coming through me.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's shift gears and kind of get back to your story.
Sure.
Because losing everything and then having not just achieving, by the way, I don't know if you've thought about this before, but when we talk about intention and we talk about people being very clear on what it is that they want, but sometimes we have things that might be quote unrealistic. And oftentimes that's just somebody else saying that.
Yeah.
But I've shared this many times because I've seen it enough times that, you know, if somebody's a certain, maybe they're, you know, 5'9" and they're trying to get to the NBA.
Yeah.
And maybe that might not happen, but you might end up in partnership with the NBA, right? And so your story and hearing you knew that you were NFL bound, and now one of your best friends on the planet is a Hall of Fame football player, Warren Moon, and the work that you do with the NFL, how nuts is that? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, it gets even nuttier.
You land it, it's just like, you know, you shoot for the moon, you land amongst the stars.
I landed on the moon, right? Warren Moon.
Right.
No, think about this. I went to law school to be a sports agent. As a backup, I studied admiralty law. I went to Tulane University to study both. if somebody asked me, how do you become a sports agent? What if I told them, go to law school, don't practice law, sell legal research online, then work for a wireless proxy server in the Silicon Valley as a director, then become CEO of a handheld device company, then retire, start being a VC, an investor, and a real estate guy, own a golf course, a ski mountain, lose everything, and then create a shift in the paradigm, a quantum shift in your life to provide value and be of service and manifest the CEO and founder of the most notable sports agency in the world, Jerry Maguire, Lee Steinberg, who will hire you in 48 hours from time he met you. That's how you become a sports agent. Now, that's how life works, though.
Yeah, crazy.
That's how crazy it is for me, and including my favorite Warren Moon story is when I moved from Akron, Ohio to California, I was a huge Ohio State football fan. In the Rose Bowl that year, 1978, Warren Moon was playing Michigan as a 16.5-point underdog in the Rose Bowl. I asked my mom and begged her if we could go to the Rose Bowl. With six kids, single mom, she packed us into the Country Squire station wagon, and I thought I was going to the Rose Bowl game. No, we were going at 4 a.m. to sit on the curb of Colorado Boulevard to watch the parade. It was the most crushing thing for me. But Warren Moon was playing, and I remember on my way home listening to the game on the radio because we couldn't afford to go to the game, and thinking to myself, you know, although Ohio State's my favorite team, whoever plays Michigan is my second favorite, and here was this unbelievable quarterback, Warren Moon, that beat, you know, Michigan in MVP of the Rose Bowl, and someday, there I am, you know, 40 years later, my best friend and business partner.
Nuts. That's amazing. All right, so I would love to talk about how, right? How did you're coming back, you've got this fresh perspective in building your company to be literally like the sports management company on the planet. So what are those kind of guiding principles? How did you get from point A to this superstar status?
It's so much fun because most people think it's complex. And I always say the universe loves simple. Einstein talks about things being simple, and I know you love that as well. But
I've got to stop you. Yeah, there's too many. This is one of my guiding principles. Einstein said, if you can't explain it simply, then you don't know it well enough. And that is like, when I heard that, it became my modus operandi. But go ahead.
Yeah, and it became mine. And so when my wife told me to go back and take stock in who I was, I came up with four things. Gratitude gave me perspective. Two, empathy, which was forgiveness. And there's only one person that I had to forgive, myself. The third one was accountability. Simple question, what did I do to attract it to myself, and what am I supposed to learn from it? What miracle can come from it? And then finally, critically, the effective communication piece. How do I emotionally connect to everyone to make their lives better? Emotionally connect, and also how do I emotionally connect to that which inspires me? Whatever you want to define that as. I built a company, many people may not believe the simplicity of it, off of gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication. Everything that our company does is to create abundance. That means make a lot of money through us, to help others, and to have fun, since it's sports and entertainment. Yeah. And surround ourselves with the right people. But when interns come in and new employees come in and they have all these great aspirations of, I'm going to teach them how to be a sports journalist, sports agent, sports marketer, publicist. And I say, look, I'm only going to teach you four things. You should see their face. Yeah. They think, what do you mean? Look, those skills, you'll develop. I can give you access to all types of mentorship, all types of content and information that will help you develop your skills and enhance your knowledge. That's not a problem, right? That's not a problem.
Yeah.
Where we're going to succeed is all of us in a collective consciousness, all of us gather together to provide value through gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication. And that is the key. No employee can live in our company without those four key principles. And if you ask anyone when you come visit us, Sean, ask them, what are the four things that you learn here? What are the four things you do here? They'll all tell you the exact same thing.
Let me ask them, what's the four things you guys learn?
Gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication.
Dang, like that, right exactly. There, it's tattooed.
Every meeting, every Monday morning meeting, every Friday, anyone that comes in, because I know, and it frustrates me, because it's so simple. I'll tell you another one that has changed my business. And I it's simple, but I know it's gonna change your life. Be a student of your calendar. Now, I know that sounds simple, but people don't study their calendar. So the time and ego are the two things that get in your way. And it's not, when I say study the calendar, that means look at everything you do in person on the phone via email or social media. Well, look at that calendar. Look into deep past what actually is happening. Because if you just look at your calendar, you'll forget 90% of it immediately, let alone the rest of the day. There's no way you know what you're doing at 12:15. But when you study your calendar and you say, who else can I help? Who else can help me? What value can I bring? But not only do I look at what I'm doing as a student in my calendar, I look through an eye of productivity and accessibility. How productive am I going to be? But also, how accessible am I am to others? As well as, what am I going to access out of this? But more importantly, I look at the white space in my calendar, the empty part. Mm-hmm. I study it. What am I? People don't realize that's the most important part. Being productive and accessible when you don't have people, emails, text, or social media things to do. That white space is where it all happens. That's where you develop your relationships with your parents and your kids and your friends. That's where you exercise, you know. And I started filling up my white space. This is where I'm going to call my mom for 1 minute to tell her I love and appreciate her. Change my whole relationship with my mom because I call her every single day, text her, email her, and let her know I love and appreciate her. My relationship changed. I don't have to prove to her I love and appreciate. So she's not calling me saying, hey, can you get this for me or can you drive down? She never does that because she knows. That's the only reason parents ask you those things. Yeah. They can do it themselves. They want you to show them they love and appreciate. So yeah. If people are out there asking you to do stuff that you know they can do themselves, it's because you're not showing them or giving them what they need. And when you look at things through that accessibility, how can I be of service? Then find out what people need, whether you know them or not. Yeah. I ask people all the time on the street, how can I be of service? You just see their face. What? Some people say, can you give me a dollar? Some people, can you buy me lunch? Some people say, nothing really. Or, hey, I work for this charity. Or could you? And the whole world gets better.
Yeah. What a concept.
Yeah.
So, like simple. You said, it's so simple. So simple. But it's another guiding light into, and to see that an organization is built on that is just really refreshing. And there's a service component, there's a charitable component to everything that you get involved with now. Yeah, is that right?
In my whole life. So I wake up every morning, and before I do my gratitude prayer, I pray for 10 people that God will put in front of me that I can help. First prayer, maybe 10 people come in for me that I can help. And everything that I do has to have a purpose or a cause tied to it. So everybody that we do business with, we have to understand the why. You know, why are we doing this? Because it can't just be for money, because money's coming through me. What are we going to do with what we produce? How accessible are we going to be, the duality of it? And I think, you know, it seems cliche a lot of times. You know, I wrote a book called Compassionate Capitalism that talks about the merchant priests and how they would do it for the service of it, but make money. And I am a compassionate, I think making money is a good thing. Here's where it changed for me as I got older. I used to always think that I had to look at what was I doing with my money that determined how good the money was. Right. So I always kind of had that side of it. Okay, well, as long as I make a lot of money, but I'm helping the Big Brothers, Big Sisters and the Boys and Girls Club and St. Jude and Crescent Moon. Right. But it was much bigger than that. And most people don't think about it. I actually think about how am I making my money and where is it going? And I think you have to extend and challenge yourself to say, how am I attracting abundance? Am I helping people by attracting abundance? Am I empowering people by, you know, and really challenge yourself to be compassionate in the way that you attract your abundance and what you do with it?
Yeah, I think that congruency accelerates that abundance as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I literally know some folks who are like, they're a health coach, but then they're working for a pharmaceutical company, you know, just to make ends meet, you know, and they're just like, I don't want to do this, but, you know.
It's soul sucking.
Yeah. Yeah, and that honesty is important, you know, and then the action has to come along with that.
Yeah.
Because I think you're a big person on the action side as well, because it's not just thinking about it and, you know, I'm going to manifest something, you know, with my mind, but you need to put your feet in action.
Yeah, I learned something, great law, right? I've always believed in the law of attraction, the laws of the universe, you know, the 8 golden laws, but John Assaroff and I, you know, who wrote Inner Size, he blew me away when he said, Dave, but you're more of a law of Goya guy than I see the law of the universe. I'm like, what's the law of Goya? And he goes, get off your butt, right?
Yeah.
The law of that. And yeah, I'm an action guy. What good is all your ideas? What good is doing well if you're not taking action? Go back to Einstein. What does he say? The first step is to take action.
Very first step.
very first step. Nothing happens until it moves.
Exactly, exactly. It's just potential energy until you put it in motion.
Yeah.
So there's so many things I want to ask you about, but you talked earlier about being around the right people, the right ideas, but not just being around the right people, but being the right person yourself. And there's something I heard you talk about that really struck a chord with me, the 99%ers. And it's very similar to something I've been talking about, but just kind of talking about with my wife for a while. So can you talk about what that is?
Yeah, so, you know, there's potential, which is 100%. And people feel it's kind of like the zeroing effect, right? I've done everything that I can. And 99% doesn't get you there. It's the empty mile, right? I don't even call it the extra mile. Like they say, the extra mile is lonely. I think the extra mile, the last 1%, is truly empty. And that, you know, when we do something, it has to be consistent every day, persistent without quit, and enjoyment of the pursuit of that 100%. And that, you know, when we hold ourselves to 100% standard, right? Not the 99%. Because it is. I've had great employees. I used to tell them all the time, you know what? I wish you intentionally did this, because then I could fire you. But you're just being a 99%er. Right. And so if you live 100% in gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication, you will get this exponential result, the 1 × 2 × 3, all the way up to as many days as you can do it. And then when it starts firing, it's exponential. It's exponential. Giving will be a good example. When I first made my real first paycheck, I wasn't bankrupt when I went to start to work for Lee. The snowball kind of effect happened while I was working with Lee. And so I lost my money. And so the hardest thing I had to do was go ahead and tell my mom that I know my dream was to buy you a house and a car, but I just lost your house and you need to move out. Mm. And then walk into my dream job, being CEO of Lee Steinberg, you know, the Jerry Maguire movie, going into Lee and saying, hey, you know, the great and powerful CEO that has the Midas touch, that owned the golf course, the ski mountain, and the guy you brag about how successful I am. I lost everything, right? That there, you know, that 99% or until what? I took 100% accountability.
Yeah.
Right. It's a different thing. It takes your whole being. And so many people cheat themselves because they do work hard, but they waste it by not completing it. They're not giving everything they have.
For me, it makes no sense. But I can, let me take a step back. I can understand it because I've been there.
Yeah.
But for me, a great example, we were renovating our old house, you know, to put it on the market. And this house has just been just a headache. Everything, the money pit for real, like
right.
The real life
I've
money
been
pit. And we had a guy came on board. You know, it's like a friend of a friend type of thing. And he does great work. And he did so much work. He put in a lot of hours, you know, going to, you know, the Home Depot and just spinning there and doing everything. The house looks really beautiful. But there are all these small things, just like 10 tiny things that might take him 2 hours to finish, and he just ghosted, right? I started like having and I'm not the kind of guy that's gonna run after anybody.
Yeah.
But after like the third call, I'm just like, man, he's a 99%er. Literally, I've had this conversation with my wife, like, why don't people just go, just finish? It's just 1% left.
Yeah.
And then I heard you talk about the 99%ers. I was like, I love this man, you know? But this happens so consistently. You know, somebody reached out, and my wife got these incredible products for her hair. You know, she has natural hair and she, you know, it can be complicated in her universe, you know? and she loved the products more than anything that she's had. And so she was trying to connect her with the person, you know, with somebody else. But just that follow-up, not really being there. It's just like, you did all this work to get to this. Now we're gonna possibly blow you up. You gotta be right there and be ready, you know, follow through on that 1%.
Yeah, think about grass. This is one of my favorite analogies, right? So grass grows from down in the soft, moist dirt. It's easy, right? And as it gets closer to breaking through, right, that thermostat, that last 1% is hard. And you got a flimsy piece of grass. But if you push through the last 1%,
boom,
it grows, right? Bamboo will grow. It takes 5 years to get, and then in 1 month, it grows like 40 feet or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what the last 1% is with. That's what the empty mile is for. And that's where the enjoyment to me, the enjoyment is that difficulty of breaking through. And it's part of the reason we have difficulty when you say you don't know why people do it, it's because it's unconscious, right? There's a duality in the unconscious. One is energetically. We keep attracting the same shortages, voids, obstacles, and limitations. Energetically, we have a thermostat. And Ed and I discussed that, right? Breaking through. So you got to shift your energy. But the other side that I've been studying, which is interesting, that you'll understand from being health-oriented and understanding as a student, is there is a genetic disposition. There's a DNA that you carry that's been handed down from four generations down to you, that you have a disposition, personalities, traits, characteristics, even addictions and obsessions that have been carried down that are programmed. And there's an exogenetic layer that can activate and deactivate, including your health. And I know you are one of the people that, to me, have proven that, understanding how to deactivate certain things within your bone by looking and being more interested than interesting. And what you did was simply, number one, you shifted your energy for your health, but two, you just deactivated the DNA. That's the way the human computer works, that code. And so why people can't do the extra 1%, sometimes it's just an unconscious competency that they believe is their reality.
Yeah, yeah. But the great news is that it's changeable.
Yeah, right.
It's changeable. You know? Wow, that's so great, man. So great. I love that analogy with the grass. That is so powerful and so true. So another big thing that, you know, I picked up from following you, and it's just been a fascinating thing for me recently, and I've been talking about this, is learning from other people, not just yourself. You know, learning from other people's mistakes, because it's not just success leaves clues, right? Failure leaves some huge, huge clues as well. So you talk about this concept of a dummy tax.
Yeah.
You talk about that.
Yeah. First of all, I give a dummy tax award. Dummy tax is what you pay from the lessons that you learn, right? That's the tax you pay. And so, you know, I use this analogy at my company. I want to encourage people to make mistakes. So I give a dummy tax award that basically we go around the room, you know, at least once a month and say, what mistake did you make? Did it break gratitude, empathy, accountability? These are the whys. You can narrow it to all four. And, you know, what effect did it have and what'd you learn? And so then I pick out who paid the most dummy tax and I pay him back with cash bonus to pay him back. Here's my analogy of the dummy tax. We try to do everything ourselves, right? Why? Well, it doesn't make any sense. I'm 5'7". If I have to reach something 10 feet up, I can go get it, right? I can figure it out. I can go, you know, build this stuff up and climb on your desk. I run risks. I could fall, I could slip, right? It takes way more time. But how easy is it to me walk over to that guy over there that's 6'7" and say, hey, can you reach that for me?
Right. Yeah.
That's how life works. Why is it we want to take all the time and pay the dummy tax ourselves when simply, first of all, there's no bigger compliment or way to make someone feel good about themselves than say, hey man, you're an expert at this. Can you help me? I know you know, you have the situational knowledge. Every time someone says, Dave, can you help me with this?
Yeah.
It makes me feel so good.
Yeah.
And then I make them feel good. And they don't have to go lose over $100 million in real estate. They could ask me. I'll tell you this. I owned a golf course. $12 million to build, right? All in. Went over $120 million. If I would have picked up the Yellow Pages at the time, if people don't know what that is, there's a book that had all the numbers in it, and just picked out any golf course owner and said, hey, man, what am I supposed to do? Not one of those guys would have said, leverage the shit out of it. Leverage it. 2008, why don't you leverage it for everything you have? Right? Every golf course guy would have told me the same advice because I got it later. Oh, dude, you need to be the third owner of a golf course. That's the guy that makes money, not the first owner. And if you're the first owner and you got a golf course that's worth money, sell it. Think about how much I would have saved myself.
Yeah.
So my first step is to ask for help. And then what do? Offer help. Right? First step is all accessibility. Can I be of service or can I ask you for a favor? I heard you're really good at, you know, old fashioned cars. I want to buy one for my wife. Can you help me get one?
Right.
Then what's dummy tax? Like when I got an expert helping me?
It's not just you're telling them what to do, but what not to do, which can be far more valuable.
Of course, you know, but always you should have three mentors at all time in your life that sit in the situation that you want to be in. It could be a relationship to money. It could be he's happily married. Whatever you want, have that mentor. Learn from it and move on.
Absolutely. So another thing is recently you had a big revelation about your health.
Yes.
And you kind of shifted gears and put massive action towards getting yourself in the best shape. Yes.
Yeah.
So can you talk about, and I love this this quote that you said at the end of one of your videos, and make sure to follow him on Instagram. It's incredible. I spend more on my health than people spend on a Ferrari.
Yeah.
So what sparked this intention for you to start really focusing on you?
So I started seeing myself because of all the speaking and social media and all of that. When you start looking at yourself, because our own self opinion, you know, age is a funny thing. You can never describe it to someone, and you always feel better than you really are. You know, if you have a positive attitude, it can work against you. Well, I started seeing myself on stage and go, man, I'm not in good shape. In my head, somehow, I thought I was that guy playing football, right? And so I started talking to people about habits, and I started becoming a hypocrite. I'm like, wait a second, I'm teaching people about habits. I'm not healthy. So my initial reaction was, I'm going to diet. Right, and I started realizing, no, this something wrong. And then I was approached by a guy from Stark, which is a full 360 type of, you know, nutrition, stretching, AR, everything. And he said to me, look, he goes, you need to make your health a priority because I want you to be around. I want you to be around. And I'm like, wait a second, my health is my third priority. I put my family first, my work second, and my health was third. And I was losing out, both diet, exercise, stretch. I didn't even know how bad I was. And so I went ahead and I changed around my priorities, and I made my health my first priority. It was going to be my greatest expense, because if I'm not here, nothing can come through me. And so I literally changed my life. I lost 47 pounds of fat. I've gained 11 pounds of muscle. Cardiovascularly, I am beyond flexibility, balance. You know, everything that I do for health is something I can do for life. And so I just simply, like I do for any habit, I set a minimum amount of time that I'm going to spend on my health. So minimum every single day, consistently, 1 hour minimum on my health, focusing on my health, you know, cardio, whatever it is, I'm focused on my health, a minimum of, and whatever it costs, it comes first. Mm-hmm. I leave work. I never did this. I leave work to go work out, right? I leave work because it's more important than work. And you know, so many times people tell me, I heard Tony Robbins today, he was on Paul Rabel, and I love this line. He goes, if you don't have 10 minutes for something, you don't have a life.
Right.
But how many people tell me, I don't got time.
Right.
If you don't, I'm telling you, if you don't have an hour for your health, you don't have a life. If you are not focused, you know, 1/24th of your day on your being here for as long as you can and enjoying it by being healthy, you don't have a life. Just figure something else out. So you should be spending as much money as you can, as much time as you can, focus as you can on yourself so things can go through you and help more.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That's incredible. And that the crazy thing is that it makes everything better. You know, your business exponentially better, your family,
your sleep.
Yeah, everything, everything. And seeing so many people, you know, because one of the things we get into psychologically is, you know, with family first, we want to make sure that we're a good person and we're standing up for our family. Moms have a bigger issue with this, tends to be. Yeah. And I've worked with thousands of people in a one-on-one context in my clinic. And it's very altruistic. Seemingly on the surface. Right. I'm sacrificing for you.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I think.
But at the end of the day, your kids don't want you. They want the best you, right? They don't want the beaten down, tired, oftentimes resentful.
Dead.
Exactly.
You.
You know, let's take care of you first. You are the number one priority so that you can show up as your best self for them. Everything gets better, but we need to start giving moms permission. We need to start giving dads permission. Start giving ourselves permission.
Bosses permission.
Yes.
To leave, right?
Yeah, it's a cultural shift.
And employees permission to go be healthy. And I think it's true. There's. Have you ever heard of the Karpman drama triangle?
No.
K-A-R-P-M-A-N. Something that I just discovered. And it has a triangle.
She was talking about Karpman.
Yeah, for South Park. I wish. But this drama triangle, it includes the rescuer. And my biggest core energy, emotional energy that I had to shift is that I was a rescuer. Born into a family where I had to rescue my mom. But rescuers are victims. Rescuers are victims. Mm. And it's a really important lesson to think about. It's that mom, she's the rescuer. But she's made herself a victim. Right? If she's sick or dies or doesn't have enough, right? All the things, the martyrish sacrifices that she's made, she's a rescuer. But she's made herself a victim. And so I really want to encourage people to look at that and look at that triangle and say, look, I'm not a victim. And it shows all three parties of being a victim.
That's powerful. That's powerful. Never heard that before.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. So speaking of health overall, emotional, mental health, why do you think service is good for our mental and emotional health?
Oh, anything that makes us feel good, right? This positive is the reason you listen to certain things, surround yourself with the right people, the right idea. There's no better truth than love and giving, right? The truth vibrates the fastest, right? Of all thoughts, the truth vibrates the fastest. So giving vibrates the fastest. It's the truth, and it's going to make you feel good. And it's going to, my favorite thing about giving is simply mathematically. There's very few things that you can do. If I give, biochemicals are released in my brain, serotonin, as you know. So it makes me feel good. It's good for everything, right? Yeah. It's good for giving you something makes you feel good. But here's the most powerful thing in Einstein sense. My favorite part of giving. Not only do you and I feel better when I give and I'm of service, but anyone that witnesses it, whether they witness it in person or when it's captured and perpetuated on the internet or on TV when you're watching or on a movie, when you see that giving of service, we tear up, we feel good, right? Think about it. That's the best thing ever. That's why it vibrates the fastest. What else can have that effect other than giving? Just witnessing it. That's what's awesome about giving.
And so I'm just really grateful to see you and to see your journey and to see now you're sharing it with so many people. And it's just so beautiful to have access to that. So nice. Just thank you for that.
Thank you, Sean.
Final question. What is the model that you are here to set for other people with how you live your life personally?
It's radical humility. You know, I think time and ego are what create resistance in our life. And the only thing that can overcome time and ego is humility. And that humility of illuminating who we are, being grateful for who we are, it all stems from being humble. You can't ask for help unless you're humble. You can't be of service unless you're humble. You can't be grateful unless you're humble. So the model is to be humble and be willing to expose and live as close to the truth, consistently, persistently, enjoy it every day, your potential. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you'd like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.